This episode of Market Talk is brought to you by Growmark FS. Keeping up on the latest in ag is a challenge, to say the least, but there are experts nearby ready to help. You'll find them at your local FS. You can trust them to bring you customized agronomic grain and energy solutions born of the latest thinking. That's because FS specialists receive continuous training that keeps them current on the latest trends, practices, and technologies. So you'll get local expertise that's both exceptional and up-to-date. Visit fssystem.com to learn how FS is bringing you what's next.
Bringing you the ag information you need. This is Market Talk, produced by the American Ag Radio Network. Now, here's your host, Jesse Allen.
Another busy day in the market trade here today. We have Fed news to discuss. We saw the soy complex shoot higher once again, with quarter wheat seeing a bit of pressure and the hog market like a freight train to the upside once again. Welcome into Market Talk. Great to have you with us once again. I'm your host, Jesse Allen. Thank you so much for joining us here today. We have a lot to cover on today's show. Again, we have seen the Fed news come out here today. We also are taking a look at this soybean complex, which continues to be strong. A little bit of weakness in corn and wheat today. Hog market on a tear once again. We're going to discuss everything coming up in segment two and three with Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics. He'll join us for our market analysis here today. Also coming up at segment four, we're going to have a conversation with North Dakota Republican Senator Kevin Cramer about some of the foreign investment in agricultural land here across the U.S., including the recent purchase by the Fufeng Group of land near the Grand Forks Air Force Base. We're going to talk to Senator Cramer coming up here in just a little bit. First up, though, let's get some thoughts on today's price action in the grain trade and livestock with Arlen Suderman, Chief Commodities Economist at StoneX, talking with him for our midday commentary. I first talk to Arlen and get his thoughts on today's grain trade action.
Well, the soybean market is really the poster child for the weather market, adding some risk premium back in as the forecasts continue to trend hotter and drier as we go into the month of August next week. That should be supportive of corn as well, and it is, but the trade also has some sense that corn is made once we get past July. I think they're oversimplifying that, but that nonetheless, that's kind of the thinking, and the weakness in wheat's weighing on it there as well. We also seen some tighter soy meal supplies, with Argentine crushers really struggling to be able to originate any soybeans to crush from the farmers there, considering the state of their economy. Farmers are hanging on to soybeans like cash. Why sell your soybeans and put money in the bank that's going to lose value when they can hang on to the soybeans that are doing a better job than the cash at holding on to their value? And so they're lacking the ability to crush soybeans in order to export meal and oil, and that sends more business our way. So kind of two factors there helping support soybeans along with the improved charts dynamics.
And also in the livestock trade, Arlen, I made this comment before we went on the air. This hog market just feels like a freight train that I definitely don't want to get in front of right now. Talk about what you're seeing in this hog market today, and also cattle as well.
Yeah, as we look at this protein complex, pretty good support overall. Even with the higher feed prices, we're seeing some strength in the feeder cattle market. But when look at the hog market, you're exactly right. Seeing some of the highest prices for the lead contract that we've seen in over a year, since the second quarter of 2021. Part of that is because we've had a shortage of hogs, a shortage of pork. That's been partially because of the heat that's been hurting performance of the hogs, lighter carcass weights, but also we've been seeing fewer hogs than what USDA said. We still have some disease issues that are affecting piglets that we're able to feed out, the piglet numbers, I should say. And so we're, even with the poor exports that we've seen this year, we've got a tight supply. And so our product market has really been on fire and really providing support for this market overall. And as a result, it continues to support higher prices. There's an anticipation that we're going to seasonally see hog numbers start to increase as we go forward from this point, as well as carcass weights as well. But thus far, we have not seen them turn that corner yet.
And again, that's Comments with Arlen Suderman, Chief Commodities Economist at StoneX, talking with Arlen earlier in the session, mid-session, before the Fed numbers came out, and much more. We're going to dive into the markets coming up here in segment two and three with Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics. He'll join us coming up here in just a little bit. Well, another story we continue to watch is oil prices and gas and diesel prices. Well, oil prices have moderated over the past couple of weeks, allowing fuel prices to flatten or even decrease in some states. Patrick DeHaan with Gas Buddy says concerns are growing about the state of the U.S. economy and a potential slowdown, which could curb fuel consumption.
That and an improvement in supply, gasoline inventories in the U.S. up for four out of the last 5 weeks, has contributed to the downdrafts that we're experiencing. And barring any unexpected outages or hurricanes and such, we could continue to see prices moderating for the next couple of weeks.
What sort of impact are Ukraine and COVID having on oil prices? DeHaan says those two issues are not active drivers of prices one way or another.
Russian invasion of Ukraine is partially the reason why diesel prices have seen such a significant gap to that of gasoline. That gap isn't really changing. I do expect diesel to moderate, but it likely will remain very high compared to gasoline. On the other hand, COVID-19 has played more of an active role in that it had limited refining capacity, U.S. refining capacity down about 1 million barrels a day compared to where it was in 2019, and that has curbed the ability for refineries to produce as much diesel as the market is looking for.
And DeHaan says he's hopeful that U.S. consumers will continue to see oil prices moderate in the weeks ahead, but he notes that a lot of volatility remains on the international scene. Well, on the flip side of this, there's some in the industry saying now is the time to fill your fuel tanks and get your diesel needs secured for fall. At least that's the word from Jason Schwantz, the Senior Vice President of Refined Fuels at CHS. He says prices will hike back up come fall and fuel inventory is still not back up to pre-pandemic levels. Schwantz says now is the time to fill your fuel tanks and get your diesel needs secured for fall because diesel fuel inventories are really low.
What we're worried about is diesel fuel inventories are really, really low, and we're worried about the fall season coming up. That's the big time where farmers and agriculture uses all kinds of diesel fuel, and our supplies are not growing like they typically would in the summertime. And we're very concerned about that. We're prepping, trying to make sure that our refineries are producing all the diesel we can and we get it out there. Quite frankly, we're focused on making sure we have that product in place. This fall, we're also focused on making sure that we're preaching to customers, hey, the price is coming down. You got a fall season. We know that's going to be big. Hurricane season tends to come in the fall. Take advantage of this dip in the prices. Make sure your tanks are full. Make sure you get out there with the cooperatives and you get that premium diesel fuel in your tank so you're ready to go this fall when the ag season hits. That's really what we're focused on.
And Schwantz says the reason we're seeing gas prices go down is that demand started contracting in July, but diesel prices are not going down as quickly.
The price of gasoline was just so high. You didn't see any contraction in driving until July. Then in July, you started to see they're not wanting to pay this higher price. So you're seeing demand contract. Also, when demand contracts, I think the supply kind of increases because we're not using as much. And I think that's why you're seeing prices come down some. I don't think it has anything to do with anything other than a contraction in demand. Therefore, the supply is catching up a little bit. So we're seeing the price come down. But quite frankly, that's only the case on gasoline. Diesel fuel is coming down some, not as fast, but we're still seeing diesel fuel demand extremely high.
Another issue is hurricanes. More than a third of the U.S. refining capacity is in the Gulf, and hurricane season begins in October. Any disasters there could also make a big impact on prices during your critical harvest period. Again, that's Comments with Jason Schwantz with CHS. Well, coming up, we're going to talk about the market trade here today. We'll dive into the Fed news and much more. We will be sitting down with Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics. He joins us next as we continue with more market talk on the way right after this.
Keeping you informed with the latest market information for your operation. This is Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
And joining us now to talk about the market trade here today, plenty to discuss, including the latest Fed interest rate hike, the soy complex on fire again, and we saw a little bit of weakness in quarter wheat, and we saw some good strength in hogs, too. We have plenty to look at. Let's say good afternoon. Welcome in to Mike Zuzulo, Global Commodity Analytics, joining us here today. Mike, always great to catch up, and as we were chatting a little bit before we went on air, it has been a pretty busy day. Just a lot of moving parts in this market trade once again, highlighted by the anticipated Fed news. Just a lot going on today, Mike.
Yeah, I'm hoping over the next 30 or 45 days, Jesse, we can walk away a little bit from the macro side and the interest rate policy and the currency side here, because the Federal Reserve won't report in August. And so we actually get 2 months now before we hear from them again officially. There are some meetings around that they could do some forward guidance commentary, and we'll be on the lookout for that. But I really was hoping that other than the natural gas and the Ukrainian-Russian situation, we could maybe start to limit our focus on the macro fundamentals and do a little bit more catching up on the supply-demand fundamentals. And I think that's what you're seeing between last week's trade and kind of a transition in this week's trade as far as who's leading and who's following in the grain complex. But right now, the Federal Reserve Chairman is speaking. That's as important, if not more important, than the actual policy. But his policy, the Fed's unanimous policy, was to go another 0.75 hike. So we're at 1.5 percentage points now in the last 2 months. They did note that we have softening in some economic data. They also noted Ukraine is creating an inflationary environment. And what I'm assuming is they're talking about the natural gas situation in Europe. And now we have Gazprom, Russia's natural gas agency, cutting European flows to only 20% of normal now instead of this winter. So between the tea leaves that I've seen so far, I'm hopeful that the dollar breaks lower. The dollar bulls decide to jump out because the interest rate bulls decide to jump out as well, because maybe through the commentary, the Federal Reserve is ready to hit the pause button and see how we look going into the end of the year.
Well, on our video feed today on our YouTube channel, pulling up the U.S. dollar chart for the week and kind of just continuing here, you know, that rate hike, that's two straight months now, 75 basis points. I believe that represents the most sizable increase since 1980. I might be wrong on that figure, but either way, we look at that. We look at the impact on the dollar. Walk us through this chart and what you're seeing with the dollar right now, Mike.
Well, you know, the thing about the dollar that has to be said when you look at a dollar chart like this is that we trade about $6.5 to $7 trillion a day in a 24-hour time period in the dollar. It is extremely efficient in terms of factoring in almost everything all the time because it has that kind of liquidity to it. I mean, so by far, the most liquid financial instrument derivative that you can think of if you're in my line of work. And so the technicals in the dollar mean a lot more to me than, say, the wheat technicals or the corn technicals. I'm not saying they don't mean anything in wheat and corn. I'm just saying the technicals mean more, in my opinion, in the dollar than anything else at this stage of the game. And so what you see is two purple lines that form a triangle, or what I would call a wedge. That's kind of a coil. That's where the market is going from a very wide range from low to high to a very tight range. And it's like a spring. It's like a coil. It's waiting for more energy, for more information, for fresh fundamentals. And I think that's where the dollar chart's very useful in this context. So the purple coil, wedge, pennant, whatever you want to call it, it showed a real tightness about the right around the end of May, early June time period. We broke higher once, and then we broke higher again, obviously because of fundamental factors that were supporting the dollar going higher. Many different fundamental factors, but Jesse, now we're under a new pennant wedge coil that is based upon the white dotted lines, and it really matches up well with a coil or a pennant or a wedge in the wheat market right now. And what I'm looking at this point with the Federal Reserve policy and some of their comments out, and the fact that the Federal Reserve Bank of Atlanta keeps a GDP number all the time, each week it updates a GDP number, and it's been between -1% and -2% ever since June. If we end up having a recession here in the United States, then it makes a lot less sense to go after the dollar, because part of the reason why we're going after the dollar right now in the financial markets is because of the weak Chinese economy and the weak European economy. And so it starts to become less and less fruitful, I think, to be long the dollar without some really good reason to be that way. So if this wedge breaks lower, I will take it at face value unless I see something just starkly fundamentally that I don't think makes sense. But as I said, it's a $6.6 trillion a day market. It's very efficient and it factors in a lot of fundamentals very quickly.
Mike, I'm going to segue. You mentioned wheat in there, but we're going to circle back to the wheat markets here today. I want to focus on the soy complex. I'm going to pull up the soy crush margin chart you sent me on our video feed. But man, bean meal's been on fire the last couple of days, and bean oil catching on with it today as well. And then soybeans themselves been on fire, especially front month August, maybe some end users trying to pry some beans out of farmers' hands right now. But I just want your thoughts on the soy complex, because it really feels like it's been the driver of the grains here to start the week, and not to mention, of course, maybe some weather premium coming back in here for this soy complex, Mike.
Yeah, all excellent points, Jesse. And I think this is one of those things that, as I said, you're looking at last week, you had the wheat as the leader to the upside, and then late in the week, because of the Ukrainian shipping deal, the leader to the downside. Now you've got the row crops coming on very hard and leading this complex, wheat more of a follower. Obviously the wheat and the dollar relationships why, but the soybeans have really taken the lead to the upside. And there are several reasons for that. Not the littlest reason is the currencies. Again, the Brazilian currency is making an almost new 3-week high right now against the US dollar. That's bringing in funds. You saw the managed money positions in the soybeans, the soybean oil, and the soy meal last week. They have liquidated a lot of positions. You've got Southeast Asian vegetable oil markets starting to come on. And I think most importantly, you've got both products helping the soybean market along with the weather. And it's oftentimes you don't get all three of those things to come together. But the meal in particular is seeing here domestically a crush margin of $1.60 to $1.70 a bushel. That's the best level since May of last year. And I think this is where it goes back to, you have really good reasons to take the beans higher, especially if we stay dry. This chart you're looking at is a soy crush margin in Dalian, China, one of the key areas that they bring imported beans in to crush for their livestock industry. It's at least a 12-year low. I go back to 2010 on this chart. I can't go back any further than that, but we've never been this low in terms of a negative number on soybean crush. It could be an all-time low for the state of that area of Dalian, China. So my point being is, you've got the weather on your side as a tailwind. You've got the currencies on your side as a tailwind, but you are starting to find some headwinds out there. And the number one headwind is going to continue to be China and their buying and their demand side, especially if prices are going higher. So be ready to get back into the hedge mindset and sell the new crop beans, and especially keep an eye on those 23 beans, which crossed through $13 again.
Well, I'll be maybe play a little devil's advocate here with some of those headwinds from China. If we have an extremely hot and dry situation set up for longer than just a week, and we really start to see an impact in soybeans, would that outweigh some of that headwind from China here with the U.S. crop, Mike?
It would for a while, I think, Jesse. I think it's a really valid point. But keep in mind that we do have that 126, 127 million metric ton bean crop in Brazil, and they're shooting towards 150 million metric tons this next year because of the corn and the soybean profitability and the input costs for corn. I think the big thing with China came out from the International Monetary Fund and their update for the world economy. It really spooked me. And you and I have talked a lot about this year. They came in with a GDP number of 3.3%. That's almost half of what it was last year. And that is mass unemployment issues that they're going to have to contend with. And they can only print so much money and drive it into the economy to try and offset it. They've got a real serious problem. And so now between Russia and their gas problem with Europe and their gas problem with Russia, they're probably in a severe recession now heading into the end of the year. China's probably heading into a severe recession heading into the end of the year. And then that leaves the United States. So I think that's the bright light of maybe why the Fed won't go crazy on raising rates at the rest of this year. And maybe that gives the commodity bull a reason to step back in without worrying the Fed will chop his head off if he buys into the grains especially. But we got to keep China first and foremost on our minds about their demand side, especially if our head of our House of Representatives goes to China against the Department of Defense mindset and China does something with Taiwan. You could see almost within a month, I think, another Russia-U.S. scenario in terms of how badly our relationship could become is in a quick amount of time. So China equals beans to me and equals pork to me. And I just want to keep that in the forefront of our minds.
And again, that's Mike Zuzulo, Global Commodity Analytics, our guest today here on Market Talk. We'll get back to our conversation with Mike coming up after the break. A few closing numbers: September corn up 3.25, 6.25. December corn up 2.25, 6.03. August beans up 46, 15.78 3/4. New crop November up 26.25 at 14.10. August bean meal up 16.50 a ton, 488.90. August bean oil up 76.6118. All three wheat complexes were lower. We'll take a look at the wheat numbers in live stock coming up next as we're back with more Market Talk on the way right after this.
It's been our legacy year after year, and we're proud of our heritage. At FS, our focus has been on improving growers' profitability by developing leading products and services to advance operations. Year after year, we've been committed to pointing the way forward. So visit FSSystem.com, and let's get you headed towards your next success. FS, bringing you what's next.
Keeping you informed with the latest market information for your operation. This is Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
And welcome back to Market Talk. I'm your host, Jesse Allen. Great to have you with us. Thanks for making us part of your day once again. Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics is our guest analyst today. We'll get back to Mike in just a minute. Still got to talk about the quarter wheat markets today, as well as livestock and energies. Want to look at some of these final numbers. I mentioned corn and the bean market before the break. Looking at wheat today, September Chicago wheat down 13.5, 7.90 1/4. December down 13.5 at 8.08 1/2. September Kansas City wheat 15.25 lower, 861 3/4. December down 15.25 at 869. Spring wheat September 18 3/4 lower, 910. December spring wheat down 17.5 at 922 on Wednesday's action. Oats for September, we're down 11, 440.5. December up 1, though, 429.5. Canola up 10, 60 at 824.40. In the livestock trade, again, hogs were on a tear Wednesday once again. August hogs up 162, 118.60. October up 280, 96.45. And December up 140, 87.37. August feeder cattle up 167, 179.10. September up 142, 180.185. Live cattle August down 7, 136.80. October down 5, 142.32. And December live cattle were 12 higher at 148.17 on the day Wednesday. And let's get back to our conversation with Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics with us here today. Let's talk about corn and wheat, Wednesday's action there. I think we can maybe combine corn and wheat a little bit at least. Wheat market finding some pressure, better than average spring wheat yields on the spring wheat tour this week. I think that might be a bit of a weight on top of some of the things you mentioned already with the dollar, et cetera. And then corn just felt like it's caught in the middle here today as we work through the trade. Would that be your kind of assessment of corn and wheat here a little bit today?
Yeah, I mean, if you're talking hot August weather for the soybeans, you've got to talk about it for the corn, because our silking percentage was only, I think, 62% this week. That's 14 points behind last year, Jesse, and we're already 3 points below last year in good to excellent corn conditions. I found it real interesting that the Bunge CEO came out today and said that he feels like we're backing off of a trend line yield in corn. I couldn't agree more. I think that 175 to 178 number is quickly being lost. We're quickly slipping out of our hands if this weather pattern is what ends up being on the models. Is actually what happens, because the ridge has broken down, but there's now a trough that's too far down south. It will help some of the droughty areas of Kansas and Oklahoma and Texas, but it's too far south for the plains and the Western Corn Belt. Iowa and Minnesota have to do a lot of making up for a lot of bad states at this point, and it doesn't look good with a very short behind crop at this point. So corn followed wheat today, in my opinion. I'd expect that to divorce themselves from that, but I'd love it if the wheat would join up with the corn and beans, because we've got a dollar that's breaking lower.
Now, Mike, with the corn crop as well, you alluded to Iowa, Minnesota. I'll throw Illinois in there too. It's, you know, a lot of pressure on those states to try and make up for what we've lost in some of those outlier states, we'll call them. Kansas, I've seen Kentucky, Tennessee, a lot of these states with real bad pictures of crops there. But also, I feel like there's some skepticism in the trade, some folks who maybe don't quite understand, or whatever the case may be, that the corn crop's made because we're moving to August. But this corn crop's not completely made by any stretch of the imagination. It could be in some areas, but it's not completely, Mike. And I think that perception's maybe being thrown around in this corn market a little bit.
I think you're 100% right. I think the other thing traders are relying very heavily upon is the idea that last year at this time, Minnesota was only 38% good to excellent, and it's almost double that this year. And Iowa's really doing well compared to last year at 80% versus 65% last year at this time. And there, I'll re-stress it, from what I can tell, and the price actions validated this, I really think the traders are honing in on those two states and their crop conditions and vegetative indexes specifically. And that's going to drive a lot of buy-sell signals, if you ask me.
Mike, let's talk energies. You sent me an unleaded chart here for this week, and I want to go through this on the video side. You can see it. And then also talking just in general about energies. I'm hearing more and more whispers that some energy folks are calling for farmers to try and lock in some needs ahead of fall. But I'm just curious your thoughts on where we stand with gas prices, diesel, the oil market, and just energies in general.
Yeah, we took a dive in the supplies this week for both unleaded and diesel, more than I think the trade was expecting net, Jesse. Between that and the Federal Reserve and the dollar and the fact that the crude oil and the dollar tend to work very much in opposite directions with one another, especially the West Texas Intermediate, which is priced in dollars, that's what this chart's kind of about. Is we've seen the West Texas Intermediate price get led down by the electronic unleaded future. So unleaded has been the dog, the crude oil's been the tail. Now we're starting to see the dollar come into play, and we've seen that the unleaded price has dropped substantially in the futures market, almost 50% pullback from its, you know, blasting off earlier this year at the first of this year. Whereas the retail unleaded gas price, it's fallen, but not nearly as much. So because of the Federal Reserve meeting and because of some of the data that I'm looking at, I too am really watching closely what's going to happen here on the charts and with some of the supply demand fundamentals that we get at the end of the month. But I probably will be recommending fall needs to get booked on the energies, especially for diesel and maybe for even unleaded, because as we talked about last week, maybe we don't go up and make new highs, but with what's happening with Ukraine and Russia and Europe, we may be able to go back up to the old highs. And I just don't want to get stuck there and locking in fall needs and being wrong by locking in fall needs. At least we can go ahead and lock in cheaper needs down the road.
Well, Mike, let's transition out of energies. I want to give us time to talk livestock. I've used this phrase a few times here this week and last week. This hog market's like a freight train just running forward. I don't want to get in the way of it. Another strong day today, cash supporting. What do you make of this hog market, specifically front month here? Because we're starting to get a pretty wide spread between August and October.
Yeah, we are. And we're starting to see that belly cutout ramp up for another leg higher, and it's helping the whole pork cutout. And as a result of that, the August hog futures, as you say, is trying to keep up with the cash index. So to me, we don't have to overcomplicate this market, Jesse. Once the cutout led by the bellies is done going higher, and seasonally that first week of August, it can be a topping area, especially for the bellies. Once we see that, I think we do want to go ahead and look at getting some hedges in place, possibly for October, maybe for the deferreds, depending on how premium they are. But like you said, there's a big discount in October versus August. It's really about the cash in the nearby. Kind of tells you that the consumer's not backing down at this point, and that the pork chops and the spare ribs are really gaining good market space and advertising space. I saw it again in this week's update. It seems like ground beef, 80%, and then the spare ribs and pork steaks and pork chops are really leading. Even the chickens are kind of falling behind with high-priced chicken meat.
Well, on the beef side, looking at cattle, feeder cattle found a little support today. I was surprised by that, as corn held, we'll call it, relatively firm. But then live cattle just fairly mixed today. Cash trade looking to be $1, $2 lower this week. What are your thoughts on the cattle market, Mike?
It makes sense that with all the uncertainty on the weather and the idea that feedlot country is going to cool off and get 2 to 3 inches of rain by the end of this week, this upcoming weekend, that the packers would be taking a stand-aside approach to this market right now. Having said that, I still think the live cattle have a lot better price in terms of not as much premium in them as feeders do. We still have that $8 to $9 premium in the feeder futures for August versus the CME cash index. And we've also seen that feeder fat spread get up to a premium, a three to six month premium at this point. I think it got up to around $41 or $50 here this week. So I think the feeders really need the fats at this point to go higher. And I really do want to watch that corn feeder spread. So if I were a hedger, which I am, I'm getting more eager to get feeder hedgers in place, especially if we can gain another $3 or $5 led by the fat cattle market.
Well, Mike, fantastic stuff as always. Again, today, floor is yours here before we run out of time. Any final thoughts or anything else you want to reiterate for us today?
Just go to globalcomresearch.com and sign up for a trial. Would really appreciate the opportunity to work with you. It's globalcom with 2Ms research.com, and just sign up for a trial and shoot me a text on that and under the comments section.
Well, Mike, always a pleasure, sir. Thanks for the insight and analysis, and enjoy the rest of your week. And we'll talk to you next week as we get into the month of August already.
Appreciate you having me, Jesse. Thanks very much.
And again, that is Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics joining us here today on Market Talk. Always a pleasure to catch up with Mr. Zuzulo here on the program. Coming up next, we're going to have a conversation with North Dakota Republican Senator Kevin Cramer about some of this foreign investment we're seeing in agricultural land across the U.S., highlighted by the recent Fufeng Group purchase to try and put a wet corn mill plant near the Grand Forks Air Force Base. We're going to talk to Senator Cramer coming up next as we continue with more Market Talk on the way right after this.
Keeping you informed with the latest market information for your operation. This is Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
And joining us now, North Dakota Senator Kevin Cramer is with us. Senator Cramer, great to catch up with you, sir. How are you?
Well, I'm very well, thank you. It's great to catch up with you. I've been welcoming this opportunity. I'm sorry I've been difficult to nail down.
Hey, no, you're a busy guy. You're a busy guy. We appreciate you making the time to join us here and talk a little bit, Senator. And I think top of mind first, a lot of folks are watching this story, this purchase of farmland near Grand Forks Air Force Base by the Fufeng Group from China. I know you, along with your colleague there, North Dakota Senator Hovind and Senator Marco Rubio, I know you've been asking for a review of this purchase. I know it brings up a lot of national security questions. So in general, walk us through the latest and just what are your thoughts on this whole deal that is potentially taking place here outside of Grand Forks?
Yeah, no, thank you for that. It's first of all, it's an issue that has a lot of people in the community in and around Grand Forks very divided, and they really shouldn't be, because the goals of the people that pursued this investment by Fufeng Group, which is owned, whose chairman, Li Shui-chun, is a very active member of the Chinese Communist Party. You know, while we are suspicious of his motives and their motives and understandably concerned, everybody's got the right goal in mind. They want to secure their Air Force base. They want to secure America, but they also want economic opportunity for agriculture and for workers in their community. The problem is, and the red flags that go up, of course, is your first point. It's 12 miles from the Grand Forks Air Force Base, which is a very important ISR base, that is to say, Intelligence Surveillance Reconnaissance Base. It's a reconnaissance wing for the Air Force. And it's also now become the home to the SDA's very first land or ground station for low Earth orbiting satellites. So there's a lot of data, shall we say, that goes from the sky to the ground, from space to the ground, in and around Grand Forks. Data can be stolen and manipulated and used, and China has demonstrated a great proficiency and willingness to do exactly that. But I think, Jesse, there's a broader challenge and a broader issue for me, and I think for a lot of us, and it's still a national security issue, but it has to do with our food supply chain. I think people should know that the Fufeng investment is about a $700 million plant, corn milling plant that they plan to build here, should it go forward. It's one more of many investments that are, you know, somewhere in the hundreds of billions of dollars of investments, or at least $10 billion of investments of farmland, and a lot of investments in the food supply chain in the United States, including, of course, meatpacking, the Smithfield Foods, for example, owned by China. And China has proven to be very capable of acquiring a lot of supply chains, critical supply chains, and then utilizing those supply chains for their own benefit. Why else would you buy them? And so I'm concerned that just the continuous purchase of food assets, of agricultural assets by China, the Chinese Communist Party, that allows them, with their 1.5 billion people and their growing economy and their growing military, to manipulate yet another vulnerable supply chain. And as you know, there are lots of supply chains that they have a lot of control over. Mm-hmm. Critical minerals, uranium. You know, we're having a debate this week and voting on a bill this week on chips, pharmaceuticals. So anyway, there's a broader concern. And I would just say that the Fufeng investment isn't the biggest investment, might not even be the worst one, but it's the latest one. And mm-hmm. after, you know, what, $6.1 billion of land purchases by Chinese Communist Party in the United States, this one has gotten finally sort of the straw that's breaking the camel's back.
Well, very true. And you led me to what I was going to say next, is that this feels like a broader issue, you know, not just China, but other foreign entities, Russia, countries in the Middle East. You know, you start to see some of these sales, you know, buying up prime U.S. farmland. Senator, I know we're trying to get a review of the Fufeng deal, but on the broader scale, mm-hmm. I know there's been talk of some other bills in Congress. What could be done to try and curb some of this foreign investment that may be harmful?
So really great point, because there's legislation that wants to identifies, to your point, China, Russia, North Korea, and Iran as particularly specific and large and more imminent enemies of the United States, and that they should be prohibited from purchasing farmland or land of any type in the United States. Now, that's fine. I'm not saying I'm against that. Don't get me wrong. But I think we have to go into this, you know, with our eyes wide open and with great scrutiny, because on the other side of a willing purchaser is a willing seller. That willing seller is generally a farmer, but certainly a landowner. And because of our open free market capitalist system, we like willing buyers and willing sellers. The problem is from a national security, food security, energy security, and all the others standpoint, we need to be careful to whom we sell. And so you're right, there's legislation to try to stem that. Or the other thing, interestingly, by the way, the CFIUS review that Senator Hoeven and Rubio and I have requested, CFIUS is the Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States. It's a 14 to 16 member committee made up of cabinet and White House officials and sub-cabinet officials, all the national security and homeland security and, you know, law enforcement agencies, as well as commerce and agriculture, and but it's headed by Department of Treasury. Agricultural investments or purchases or transactions are generally exempt from CFIUS. So there's legislation to no longer exempt agriculture, and I think that's a good bill. And I think Tommy Tuberville, Senator Tuberville from Alabama, has that bill, and I'd be supportive of that. So I like increments, Jesse. I don't like knee-jerk reactions, but it's time to recognize that we have friends, we have allies, we have occasional allies, we have situational allies, and then we just have adversaries. And not every foreign government should be treated the same.
Well, with that, Senator Kevin Cramer, Republican from North Dakota, we appreciate the time. As always, thanks for joining us, sir, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you for the opportunity, as always. Bye-bye.
And that's going to do it for Market Talk here today. Coming up tomorrow, Brian Doherty of Total Farm Marketing will join us. I'm your host, Jesse Allen. Have a fantastic rest of your day.
It's been our legacy year after year, and we're proud of our heritage. At FS, our focus has been on improving growers' profitability by developing leading products and services to advance operations. Year after year, we've been committed to pointing the way forward. So visit fssystem.com and let's get you headed towards your next success. FS, bringing you what's next.